Hey, it's Friday, December 14th, and this is Beginner's Puck, the podcast for hockey fans both new and old. It's been a while since I've done that.
I know. It has been, hasn't it?
I stumbled over it a little bit.
Is it a podcast? Is it a hockey podcast? It's a hockey podcast. It's a hotcast. How's that?
Okay. Woo!
So, hey, Erica.
Hey, Deb.
We haven't talked about hockey since we were in a car together.
I know. It's been a while, and my, how things have changed.
Yeah, which is why we're calling this episode Changes. Or is it, we were trying to determine, is it four ch-ch-ch-ches and changes or three?
I think so.
I think it's four. Okay. But, you know, I was thinking before we started recording, one of the reasons why I love the car cast so much. So first of all, because I think it's really fun to do an off the cuff hot take of something that we've just seen or are going to see. And second of all, it is like the best road trip souvenir ever. To look back.
That's true.
We have like records of these great hockey trips that we've taken like in audio format. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's great. It's my one of my favorite things to do. So,
I mean, I love looking back at the pucks that I have collected, but listening to a podcast from that time gives much more clarity on what I was thinking at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So some of the big changes that have happened since that car cast, unbeknownst to us, we were on our way to see Todd McClellan's very last game as the Oilers coach.
Yeah. I feel like we were talking a little bit about our other fandom, Doctor Who, before we started recording, and I feel like I want to touch on something that pops up a lot in Doctor Who fandom, and that is the concept of received fan wisdom, because there is also hockey received fan wisdom. A lot of times it's much more current about, like, you know, the received fan wisdom as to what a team should or should not do. And I feel like you and I, both of our teams, ended up kind of going against what the received fan wisdom was for
so
expected.
Yep.
Because, yeah, as you said, Todd McClellan got the axe after we saw the Oilers play live. And it was sort of received fan wisdom, at least around Edmonton, that it shouldn't be Todd McClellan, the coach that got the axe, that it should actually be the general manager, Peter Chiarelli, who still has his job as we record this. Mm-hmm. And I feel like for the Flyers, I got the impression it was the other way around. People were calling for your coach's head.
Oh, yeah, on a platter. In fact, this is the other change. Our general manager, Ron Hextall, the former fighting goalie of the Philadelphia Broad Street Bully Flyers, was let go unexpectedly. And everybody thought it was a typo because they thought, are you sure you don't mean Hextall, not Hextall? Because nobody saw that coming. I mean, honestly, I'm telling you, Philadelphia was shook. Nobody saw it coming. They had been screaming for Hextall's ball in a bag since, for like 2 years now. And I honestly, it was really hard to even wrap your head around it. Now, obviously, since that has happened, the little mice have come out of the woodwork telling all sorts of tales about Ron Hextall's iron fist of ruling the Flyers and how he wanted to be involved in things that perhaps were a little overreaching of what his position was. And there was a little bit of bad blood, too, between Hextall, which these are things I wasn't aware of. Because, you know, people, when you have a good scapegoat, you tend to let some of the other stories go. And Hextall, Dave Hextall, the Flyers coach, has been a good scapegoat in Philadelphia for a while. So Ed Snyder, who was the original owner of the Flyers, who passed away a few years ago, was the type of owner who absolutely embodied the theory, once a Flyer, always a Flyer. So if you put time in the Flyers organization, you were family. And players have stories, retired players tell stories of even when they were no longer with the Flyers, of having medical issues and Mr. Snyder reaching out to them and saying, hey, are you okay? Do you need money? Is there anything I can do? Like, that was the type of person that he was. Now, obviously, the Flyers are no longer owned by the Snyder family. They are owned by Comcast. But the culture, that culture was always still there. But under Ron, it seemed that he had a closed locker room. where as Elliot Friedman said, you could get nuclear codes out of the president before you could get any information out of Ron Hextall. And he didn't like people in the locker room. And there was an incident where the Flyers alumni were coming to do an exhibition game and they wanted to use the locker room. And he said, no, you can't.
Wow.
And that kind of rubbed people really the long way. And that's not what I mean by a closed locker room. A closed locker room is he just didn't like people around his players, you know, period. Like
right.
he just didn't want the press in any more than they had to be. He didn't want random people wandering in. You know, it was like you were all business all the time. And apparently that stuck in the craw of a lot of people. And there's just little things like that, I guess, that kind of build up over time that made people realize, at least in management, that this was maybe not the direction they want it to go. And this person was, it was my way or the highway. And he was not willing to adjust his course at all. Now, whether that course involved changing coaches, we don't know. There's been rumors, too, that Hextall had a lot of constraints put on him and his coaching decisions. But, you know, that's all rumors and speculation. There's articles out there, if you want to Google them, about, you know, how he wanted to control the players' diets and just be involved in their personal lives in ways that perhaps was a little bit overbearing. So it was very funny to me that after Buffalo, the Flyers social media showed a picture of all the players eating, well, not all the players, but some of the players eating buffalo wings in the locker room. Because one of the big things was, you know, Ron wouldn't let anybody eat pizza. Like, there was a lot of pizza in the locker room or, you know, things like that.
Oh,
so,
my goodness.
It seemed a little pointed that all of a sudden we get a picture of people eating in the locker room and they're eating buffalo wings in Buffalo. So, but yeah, you're right. Received fan wisdom. Who knew that this would be the turn that it would take? So how are you guys? Yeah. So you got Ken Hitchcock. How are you guys feeling about Hitch?
I was very nervous at first. I will cop to that because, you know, I was sort of paying attention to Dallas because they were your side boys.
They were my side boys last year. Yep.
And
for those of you who are, you know, maybe listening for the first time, Ken Hitchcock was the Dallas Stars coach last year. He came out of retirement after retiring from the St. Louis Blues. Got convinced to come out of retirement to coach for Dallas, retired again, got convinced to come out of retirement to coach for Edmonton. I don't think retirement's sticking. I mean, it's just a hunch.
Yeah.
But, all right.
He hasn't taken.
So go ahead.
I was nervous just because I knew that, you know, Dallas had some younger players who weren't maybe performing as well as you had hoped.
And older players.
When they were under Hitchcock.
Jason Spezza looking at you.
Yeah. We got a lot of young players on our team. So I was worried. Also, I sort of know that he is known for coming in and really bolstering defense. Sometimes at the expense of the offense, and I really like our offense. I didn't want to see that go away. But true to form, he has bolstered the defense. The goals against has gone way down. We don't get scored on as much as we do or we had before, and our scoring hadn't been super high. Although, actually, as I look at my phone, the Oilers are playing right now, and they just scored two goals since I came in here and sat down to record with you. So I guess maybe things have turned around on that front. It was game after game of like a win by one goal, which was just, you know, classic Oilers. And by classic, I mean, you know, last year, the year before, a one goal game. It was nightmarish and nerve wracking because they would never ever come back from that. And that has not been the case. They've held on to one goal leads. They've come back and won. I feel like for all of my reservations, he has said all the right things. Hitchcock has in interviews. I like his style in terms of the way that he works. I mean, he talks about how his management style is that he just wants to grow as a person, not necessarily just as a coach. He goes to like leadership conferences and stuff. And yeah, I appreciate a guy who is interested in growth, and because I think that that's what our team needs. So
yeah.
So far, so good. I don't know our exact record since he took over, but I want to say it's like 8-2-1, or that was what it was earlier this week. So not bad.
You know, it's interesting. there's been some criticism that Hitch is the type of coach that he rides and rides and rides and rides and mm-hmm. rides, and it's kind of relentless.
Maybe we could use that.
And that's what I'm thinking. You know, sometimes that even that change is enough to light a spark, whether it's sustainable or not, or if it's just a temporary thing to get you out of the hole and get you ready for the next coach that's coming by. You know, it might be, mm-hmm. you know, sort of the juice that you need to get through. So it's interesting. I'm keeping a weather eye on them because I was really high on Hitch when he came in with the Stars, and then it all fell apart at the end. I mean, Dallas had that disastrous road trip last year that just knock them out of the contention, and it was deflating. It really was. And you listen to Jason Spezza talk about last year, and it was just not a good fit. He and Hitch were not a good fit. He was not utilized, and you know, his production has gone up. So a lot of it is personality. Mm-hmm. And I think you might have some of those issues a little bit more when you get with some older players. Do you know what I mean? Who are maybe a little more set in their ways, and he might be a great coach for younger players that he's playing. That was a huge issue in Dallas, that mm-hmm. he wasn't giving, you know, the development that was needed to some of the kids. So, you know, he liked his vets. So. But, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes any change is good change. We're not seeing that here in Philadelphia yet, I got to say.
No.
Well, you know, it's so frustrating because besides goaltending, I just can't put my finger on, like, there's not one thing other than, but goaltending's been a perennial issue here in Philadelphia. But that's not even an excuse for why is our defense sucking so hard? You know, why is, it's just been a mess. It's been a mess. Last mm-hmm. night, they played in Calgary. They were up by two until the last 2 minutes of the game, and tied it. It literally tied it in the last, it was under 2 minutes. And they, you know, went into overtime and lost. And it's inexplicable. There's been a lot of sloppy play. Now, we had our GM, as we mentioned, was replaced with Chuck Fletcher, previously of the Minnesota Wild, which is one of those teams, since we're talking about Doctor Who, are like the Silence. If anybody watches Doctor Who, that is the villain that you only remember it when you're looking at it. And as soon as you turn away, you forget about them. And the Minnesota Wild is that team for me. Like,
they are the Minnesota Mild.
Like, they do. They just don't stick.
That is the perfect epithet. Right. It's not even an epithet. It's just a name.
Right. They're not bad. You know, they're a good hockey team. They just don't stick with me for some reason. There's nothing that makes them stand out to me in any way, shape, or form. And you know, they kind of spectacularly collapsed last year as well. And Chuck Fletcher's contract was not renewed. He became a free agent coach. Is that what they are? we'll see what happens. Again, somebody who's saying all the right things. There's mm-hmm. rumors that Philadelphia is aggressively putting feelers out for trades, which at this point, I don't think really anybody's safe unless you have a no movement clause. I think they're willing to kind of mm-hmm. shake things up. Chris Pryor,
is there anybody that you really want to offload?
God, right now they're just...
Fire sale, you know? Everything goes.
There's players. See, this is hard because, and we could touch on my fantasy hockey woes a little bit later in this. Like, there's players that I genuinely like. I think they're great. Just like as people, and I appreciate who they are, and they're good hockey boys. But you know, I that's sentiment. And sentiment's not going to get us too far. I mean, for the longest mm-hmm. time, anybody would said you can't touch Simmons. Like, Wayne Simmonds is so much part of Philadelphia hockey. But honestly, his production standing has took bad penalties last night. He's older. I'm not quite sure he's fully recovered from his injuries from last year. So I don't know. There's nobody. Honestly, at this point, I sell them all. Just shake it up. Bring it down. Mm-hmm. I hate saying that because there's players that I really enjoy watching play and I just like, and it would hurt. I'm not saying it's not going to sting a little bit, but I don't know how to fix it. I mean, not that I would, because I'm sitting here talking mm-hmm. to you and not a coach or development or anything, but
it's also important to note that, you know, while they were both big fundamental changes for our teams, changing the coach has a more sort of boots on the ground effect
yes.
on the play of the players and the mood in the locker room. Yeah, changing a GM, a general manager, can overall, like in the big picture, change a team actually much more. Like you can actually change the team because they're the ones doing all the trading and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But that takes a lot longer to sort of filter down. And, you know, as you said before, there may have been some iron fist rule over the way Hakstol is coaching, but even if that loosens up and he changes, like it's not going to be as big of a change as putting an actual different body in there like
yeah,
we did. So,
yeah.
You know, it does kind of make sense that there's been a pretty noticeable shift for us and maybe not quite as much for you guys yet, but that still could be to come.
Right. Well, and the word on the street is that Chuck Fletcher's on this. They're right now, the Flyers are doing their Canada road trip. So they started in Eastern Canada and they've working their way over to Western Canada, and it's
I really wish they would have beat the Flames. That's my provincial rival.
not happening. We almost. Within 2 minutes, we were within 2 minutes of beating them handily, but no, it all fell apart at the end. But the word on the street is that Fletcher's along, and this is his evaluation and assessment trip. And just seeing, you know, what they're doing. And road trips are a little different. You know, you really get a chance to, you're spending time with the guys, you're in hotel rooms, there's a lot more bonding that goes on. So we can see the team dynamic. So I anticipate that after Christmas, we'll see some movement. There's been a few other things that happened. The assistant general manager is out as well, Chris Pryor. And also they replaced Gord Murphy with Rick Wilson, which is interesting because he's also a North Dakota guy like Hakstol was.
That's the assistant coach.
He is the
coach?
Assistant coach. Also, I think most recently with the Dallas Stars. And he replaced Gord Murphy, and Gord Murphy was the assistant coach who oversaw defense. So I'm waiting to see. that hasn't approved any. So I don't know how successful
well,
that
how long
been.
Ago did that happen at basically at the same time? Or
no,
was
that's
that later?
Like that's later. It was a little bit later. So yeah, I think it was like last week. So there's not been a lot of movements. I don't know. At this point, I'm just like hands are in the air. I'm watching other teams too, and I'm getting much more enjoyment right now out of watching other hockey that is not the Philadelphia Flyers. The Philadelphia Flyers are just. It feels a little punitive right now, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, that is one thing that I have to say, that I wake up and think I'm blessed every day, because even when the Oilers aren't doing well, we still, knock on wood, as long as he's not injured, we still have Connor McDavid. And anytime Connor McDavid is on the ice, anything could happen. He is so fun to watch, even when the rest of the team is just like crumbling around him, which happily, knock on wood again, isn't happening right now. But yeah, I was just sitting with Steven day before yesterday or something, and we were watching some random game, and he just turned to me and said, "You know what? Other teams don't have Connor McDavid." And I was just like, "You know what? You're right. They don't." He's like, "Yeah, it's not as much fun, is it?" I'm like, "Nope.
It's true."
So, yeah.
Oh, so some other changes. The NHL is expanding by one whole team, up to 32 teams now. Well, as of 2020.
Yay, even numbers.
Even numbers. And is that your way? You have a whole another team in your area, sort of.
It is. I'm going to have another, which is exciting and not exciting, because same thing with Vegas. Like, we're all in the same division, and it's exciting to cheer and root for the new guys. But at the same time, I want my team to win, so I'm also cheering against the new guys. And there's all kinds of new guys running around at this point between the Golden Knights and the as yet to be named Seattle team.
Mm-hmm.
So. We'll see how that goes.
And it's a direct flight. It's one of the few direct flights from Edmonton that you can get.
It is. Yeah. So you can bet your booties we will be going down to see some Seattle hockey.
Absolutely. Western Canada road trip part two.
Well, air trip. Well, there's you don't road trip through Western Canada unless you like,
oh, that's true.
I don't know, have an RV.
That's true. Air trip. Well, no. So we fly into Seattle and then we drive to Vancouver.
Okay, that's a mini road trip, but that counts.
Yeah, that counts. All right. Now, this is going to be interesting because, as we all know, Vegas was a game changer when it comes to expansion teams. So will the success be replicated? Will teams play the expansion draft game a little bit differently now that they see what happened in Vegas. There was lots of backdoor trades happening, so Vegas wouldn't pick certain players. Is that going to happen again? I don't know. Mm. So that part really fascinates me, is how the GMs are going to look at the Vegas example and say, you know, we're going to handle Seattle just a little bit differently because that didn't work out too well for us now, did it?
Yeah, I would not be surprised if history does not repeat itself and things go very differently for Seattle. Part of me wants history to repeat itself again, though, because I hate the idea of this new Seattle team coming in and being like, yeah, we're going to be like Vegas. We're going to be awesome right to start with. And then they start like a typical historical expansion team and win like six games in a year or something. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's pretty low. But I don't want that to happen because I really want Seattle to succeed. And I feel like, you know, they've got a great fan base starting out. I think it was 12 minutes for their requisite season ticket interest sale to sell out. They think they needed to hit 10,000 and they hit it in 12 minutes. So like, I want good things for that city and for that new team. I just don't want them to beat Edmonton. But I'm worried that after seeing the way things went and sort of how, I don't want to say how easy other teams sort of went on Vegas, but how unconcerned the rest of the NHL seemed to be with the oncoming storm that ended up being Las Vegas, I suspect that they will play their cards differently this time.
I do. And I wonder how much of a difference it's going to make, because as everybody keeps saying, in the cap era, there's so much more parity when it comes to teams. Like, so I'm wondering if, you know, you have a team and parity is going to be there just because of the cap issue. Mm-hmm. And let's not discount like anger and spite as a motivator. So
that's true.
Which I think was really kind of fueled Vegas a lot. There was a lot of people that were peeved that their team did not want them, did not protect them.
It was basically like your classic 80s sports movie where the team is made up of all of the misfits that nobody else wants that, you know, goes on to almost success.
Yep, exactly. It is Hollywood. And now with Jerry Bruckheimer as one of the owners, you don't think they're going to be looking for a Hollywood angle? Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, yeah.
Oh, do you have any favorite names? Because that's been a big sport on Twitter. It's like, what should we call the Seattle teams?
I have heard that the Krakens is off the table, which makes me sad because I think that would be awesome.
Besides, you could call the arena the Krak House.
Yeah, see, I believe these are the reasons that they have taken it off the table, which still makes me sad. Some people are stumping for Sasquatch. I'm not a big fan of that. I just don't like the way that word feels in my mouth.
It feels squatty.
Yeah, Sockeyes won a newspaper poll. I don't know. I just fish. Like, that just doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah, but, you know, there's kind of a pun there a little bit because you can, like, you know, Sockeyes, a little the fighting thing. You know, they can,
That's true. That's true. And it is hockey. They're still fighting in hockey to some extent. Some people want the Metropolitans, which I kind of like that because of the historical angle, because the Seattle Metropolitans won the Stanley Cup in 1917. They were not an NHL team, I hasten to add. But a lot of people have said, oh, that would be so confusing because we have a metropolitan division and it's on the other side of the country. I'm sorry, who's going to get confused about a team versus a division? Do you think the Seattle team is accidentally going to play in the wrong division?
I was confused. When you said that, I'm like, ew, that feels wrong because I'm in the metropolitan division. Like, no, you can't have that.
Okay, well, there you go. That's why that one's off. And then I think the Pilots is another one, which I kind of like because I grew up in Wisconsin, and the Milwaukee Brewers were always the baseball team that we cheered for. And before they were the Milwaukee Brewers, they were very, 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 very briefly the Seattle Pilots. So I think that would be kind of a cool historical connection.
I'm really bummed about the crack, and that was my favorite.
Yep, me too.
Jeez. Me too. All right, so we'll see what happens. All right, moving on, World Juniors. World Juniors is coming up. Do you realize it's December 14th? Like, Christmas is 11 days away, which means World Juniors is 12 days away.
So. Every year, I get the week off between Christmas and New Year's, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to settle in, and I'm just going to just watch the crap out of some World Juniors, and then life happens, and I don't get to watch as much as I want. So let's hope that this is the year that it changes, and I get to just hunker down and watch a bunch of international young, like, good hockey boy hockey.
It is. That's what I want. I love World Juniors just because it is, they're just so pure and young.
They haven't had the fun coached out of them yet.
They haven't had the fun coached out of them. The emotions are just because they're children. I am sorry. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you're like 19 years old. You're a child. You're a child hockey baby. And, you know, last year when the second place team was, I forget what country it was. The one guy took his medal off and threw it into the crowd. Everybody's like, oh, poor sportsmanship. I'm like, he's a child. He's angry and upset. And it was like, yes, it was poor sportsmanship. But I appreciate those emotions because they coach emotion out of hockey players. And
unless they're fighting,
but you don't get that rawness and that realness and unless they're winning the Stanley Cup. Do you know what I mean? Then you see hockey players kind of cut loose a little bit. But for the most part, you know, they're very media trained and just, you know, how you behave and how you act. And like World Juniors, there's just like emotion is right there on the surface. And they're just they're gangly and just. Just adorable, and I love watching it because it is so exciting. It's like what I love watching college basketball way more than I love watching pro basketball, just because it's that level of intensity and emotion that's involved, because what's on the line for these kids is tremendous. They know all the eyes are on them. They know that players that are coming up to the draft, that this is another place for scouts to really get, you know, a really good eye full. People are judging them. It's exciting. It's really exciting. And I love it. I don't get to watch nearly as much as I would like to, but I enjoy almost every game that I watch. So, and then exciting news for you guys that Edmonton is getting it, what, in 2020? Edmonton and Red Deer? Are getting the World
Juniors?
I can't
remember if it's 2020 or 2021. I always get it mixed up because, you know, it starts in one year and then finishes in the other year. So
that's exciting.
But yeah, it is exciting because, you know, we have this brand new, beautiful arena, which you have now seen.
Yes, it is beautiful.
By that time, the other buildings around it will be completely finished. They're mostly finished now, but then there will be this really nice plaza and a hotel, and just like it'll be wonderful. It'll be just great. We'll have the facilities to be able to host something like this. Red Deer is not that far away. Apparently, I think Calgary and Edmonton had it a number of years back, and like that's a 3-hour trek in between.
Yeah, I drove that. It's long.
Yes, whereas this is much sort of more reasonable and close, and I'm really excited and looking forward.
It cracks
to that.
Me up.
I mean, it's years off
because Red Deer's not that big. Like, it's a pretty little town. There was a deer walking across the road in Red Deer when we were driving through Red Deer. Like, it is still pretty much in the middle. So, like, the idea of having, like, this big hockey tournament there just delights me. I mean, Edmonton's not a huge city, but it is definitely a city. And
yeah, we've got, like, you know, with the metropolitan area, we're, like, in the million-ish range.
Yeah, but Red Deer's little. Maybe it's more sprawling, more suburban, but it just seemed like this little tiny center city. Like the little town center was, there was a deer in the middle of town. Like it wasn't in the suburbs of Red Deer.
If there's one thing that even smaller towns or smaller cities, because Red Deer is a city, but if there's one thing that smaller cities in Alberta do have the infrastructure for, it's hockey tournaments.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep.
It's in the DNA. Well, it
will not be a problem.
Yeah, it's exciting because the Flyers have 9 prospects spread out on the preliminary World Junior rosters. Like they haven't announced final rosters yet. But yeah, we have 9 in the preliminary roster. So it's going to be a really good chance, at least in this area, for Flyer fans to get a look at what could be the future. We'll see. As much as everybody's ragging on Ron Hextall right now, the man knew how to draft. He had good scouts working for him, and our prospect pool is deep. It sucks right now, and that's part of the problem because everybody's tired of waiting, but
I am suddenly terrified for the domination
we have 9
of the Flyers a few
prospects.
Years down the road.
Yep. Plus Carter Hart is waiting for us.
I don't know how many Edmonton has. I just know that Evan Bouchard is the one that everybody's really going to have their eye on because, you know, he had his little, you know, 9-game cup of coffee in the NHL this year. And like, he, you know, there's scuttlebutt that he may even be team captain. I don't know about that, but yeah, he's like, he does. We refer to him in like hockey media here as old man Bouchard because he may only be like, I think 19, but dude like carries himself as if he's 35. Mm-hmm. And he looks old.
It's like Aaron Ekblad. I swear to God, Aaron Ekblad was like of the Florida Panthers was born with a beard. I swear. Like he probably started growing facial hair like in third grade. Mm-hmm. Like this man, just, you would not look at him and think, you know, yes, you are a young man in your early 20s. Like even from the time he was like 17, just look like old man Ekblad. It looks like he's seen some things, you know. Oh, gosh. So, yeah, that is exciting. Like, I'm just running through my list because it's been so long since we've talked of things that I wanted to talk about. All right. Here's a dilemma. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you a question. How do you cope with this? Because I'm struggling a little bit. How do you personally, Erica Ensign, cope when a player that you really like is traded to a team that you really, really don't like?
You know what? I am a new enough hockey fan that has not happened to me yet. And yeah. So,
all right. So let's talk about Dylan Strome.
Okay.
Traded from the Arizona Coyotes.
Oh yeah. He's with Chicago now.
Right. Now I've been a Strome fan for a little bit because Arizona is one of those teams that I kind of, Arizona and Colorado were teams that just endeared themselves to me, very new in my hockey fan because they were so, so bad and they had such interesting narratives around them, but they also had really, really good social media who was like, yes, we know we suck, but we're going to have fun anyway. So they are like two teams that I have sort of really followed with a close eye since I started following hockey, just because of those factors. So Dylan Strome was always that, you know, the hashtag free Dylan Strome, like, what are they doing with him down there? Like, why can't they develop anybody in Arizona, honestly, because they keep trading away their young talent. So it was like one of those players, he bounced around, he went back to juniors, and he came back to the Coyotes, and they went to their AHL affiliate, the Roadrunners. And finally, he was back up in Arizona, and then they traded him. So, like, I kept rooting for this kid. Like, you can do it. Like, you were fourth overall in Connor McDavid's year. Like, you can do this. And now he is doing it, but he's just doing it in Chicago. So, like, part of me is like, I'm very happy that he is seeing some success there. But I don't like that team for a number of reasons. And it's hard.
Yeah, I have a feeling that... I mean, I've had players that I have liked quite a bit that have been traded to other teams. And I think that actually for me, I discover how much I really do like that player when they get traded away. Because there are some, like Tyler Pitlick, who I think he's still with the mm-hmm. Stars. And like every time I yep. see him play, I am still happy. Like I'm just like, go Pity. Right. You go. I like you. But then there are other players like I really wanted to be happy for Neil Yakupov and I wanted him to find success somewhere and he really kind of didn't. And then I just sort of found myself not caring as much as I thought I would. So, so I think if there was a player like I really, really loved, like say, heaven forfend Ryan Nugent-Hopkins get traded away. But if he did and he went to a team I didn't like, it would really hurt me. I think it would break my mm-hmm. heart and I don't know. Like, I would still want to cheer for him, but I would want... Like, if he went to the Ducks, for example, which would be a terrible, ugh. Terrible fit. But if he did, like, I would want him to be successful, but... Actually, right? No, you know what? I might cheer for him to do really awful for, like, a year so they trade him away to a different team. I think that's probably what I would do. Maybe that makes me a bad person or a bad fan, but I think that that's where I would land.
That's mean. That's just mean.
Yeah, well, that's... It's not like my cheering and my wishes are actually going to have any actual effect on
right.
the players. So I'm not gonna feel guilty for feeling that way.
I know. See, and the thing is, I think Chicago is a good fit for Strome only because they're having a cap space issue because they have so much money tied up in Tays and mm-hmm. oh god. And yes, his name is in my mouth.
He
Patrick
who
Kane.
Shall not be named.
He shall not be named. And yeah, and you know they've got a couple of players on that team that are just locked into long-term big money contracts. And, you know, they need to develop younger, cheaper talent. And So I think it's a good fit. I really do. And I think, you know, him playing with DeBrincat, who played with in juniors, is a great, great thing. And, you know, I just think he's finally going to get a chance to thrive. On the other hand, that means Chicago's going to thrive. And I don't know. I don't dislike them as much as I dislike Anaheim. Mm-hmm. But,
yeah, it's a tough one. It's a tough one.
It is a tough one. So we'll see. I'm still rooting for Dylan Strome. I'm hoping he does so well, and he's coming up to the end. I believe he's coming up to the end of his ELC. Yeah, because he and McDavid were the same year. Mm. I don't know how it worked with him bouncing around, though. So anyway, I hope that when it comes time for him to negotiate his next contract, then somebody says, hey, we'll take a shot on Strome. We'll give him some money. Speaking of contracts, the Nylander watch is finally
Oh, thank
over.
Heavens. My I God.
Know. It went to the 11th hour.
I know. Well, see, I actually just stopped paying attention to hockey media here because, like, as bad as it was for you, I guarantee it was worse. I guarantee it was
sure.
worse here in Canada.
I was nail-biting. I swear I was away that weekend. I was on a big shopping weekend with my sisters and my mom, and they're like, what are you doing on your phone? I'm like, I have to know. Is Willie Nylander signed yet? Because there's a 5 o'clock Eastern time deadline, and they're just looking at me like I've grown another head. And I was like glued to my phone, like for that last hour. Like I could not imagine they weren't going to sign him, but it, like I was starting to doubt. I was starting to have
I
doubt.
Just so didn't care anymore. Like I was interested at first, like kind of curious, like, oh, how is this going to play out? And then I just got beat over the head with it so much that I was just like, I genuinely don't care. So I tuned out. And actually for like the week almost after it happened, I just stayed away. Like I couldn't watch anything hockey media related on television. Like I was fast forwarding through bits of podcasts because, yeah, okay, finally it was done, but people were still talking about it here. Over and over and over again for like a good amount of time. And I haven't really even dipped back in that much to see if they're over it yet. Cause you know, it's always going to be the Leafs for 20 minutes and the rest of the entire NHL for 10. That's just the way things work here.
Right.
But mm-hmm. yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's because the Leafs have wormed their way into my heart a little bit this year. So, and then actually it's not just this year, last year they kind mm-hmm. of started and this year I just gave up fighting it. So I was invested, I have to admit. Mm-hmm. It's funny because even today I was listening to NHL radio, as I do every morning on the way to work, and Elliot Friedman was on Stelic and Simmer show, and they were talking about it again. But they also, because let's face it, now that Nylander signed, the big news everywhere is going to be Auston Matthews and Mitch Marner. Yep. I mean, is that dominating Canadian sports media yet? Because I know that's all I hear about when I turn on
it. Probably is. Like I said, I still haven't really dipped back in to find out.
Yeah. So, and the thing that I've been hearing a lot about is, will this finally be the year that we get back to offer sheets?
Yes.
I've been hearing that a lot. There's been from Hockey Central at Noon's been talking about it. 31 Thoughts was talking about it. You know, the big guys, the big, mm-hmm. both those podcasts have Jeff Merrick. Maybe it's just a Jeff Merrick conspiracy.
He does like chaos, that guy.
He does. He is definitely Team Chaos. He will proudly say that. But no, they were talking about that this morning. So I started thinking, why don't we talk about offer sheets? Because I think people are a little confused by that. And if you are new to hockey, you might be wondering, the heck is an offer sheet? So Erica, why don't we learn something about offer sheets?
Great idea. It's time for What the Puck, those hockey things that everyone knows, but we all had to learn sometime. So, Deb, what the puck is up with offer sheets?
Oh, offer sheets. As we said earlier about Jeff Merrick loving chaos, offer sheets is legal chaos in the NHL. I think that's a good way to term it. Mm-hmm. So, basically, when a restricted free agent is coming up, when their term is coming up and they're getting ready to negotiate their contract, right? As we've talked about so many times, the difference between a free agent, a restricted free agent basically has bargaining rights. Their team has the right to claim them first, to make them an offer. And they can't go on the open market, basically, is what a restricted free agent is. Not the master of their own destiny. They are
they're restricted.
You know, they are, they're restricted by their team. Mm-hmm. That is why they're called restricted free agents. And we have lots of podcasts in our back catalog that talk about these differences. So what an offer sheet does, however, is it allows another team to possibly come in and entice a restricted free agent away by making them an offer. I'm assuming it's an email, not a sheet, but it may be a
probably
sheet.
Probably the term offer sheet came back in the day where they would literally write it up on a sheet of paper and have it
probably
delivered.
Like slide it to you across the desk
or under the door. I'm picturing like just like real subtle.
Right. So what happens is another team will come in and say, ho, ho, you have a restricted free agent that you need to sign. We would like to make an offer for that restricted free agent. And then the team that owns the restricted free agent's rights has to match that offer, or the player can take the new offer.
Oh, that's just so like cold.
It's so cold. It's so cold. It hasn't happened in a while, because now there's been a little speculation that GMs have gotten together and said, let's not do this to each other. But it's probably more along the lines of the rules and regulations for offer sheets have become, it's not just money anymore. So you not only can swoop in and offer an astounding amount of money, you also have to offer draft pick compensation. So, and that draft pick compensation is varies depending on how much salary is being offered. So it's not, so you could be a team that has really low cap space and have a lot of money to spend and saying, I'm going to go after Austin Matthews this year and I'm going to offer him $1 billion. I'm going to just back the trucks up and say, take all of the monies. It's all yours. Come play for us in East Beaufunk America and bolster all our ticket sales. And even if we don't win, we've got Austin Matthews and the marketing potential is amazing. What you may not have is all the draft picks that are required to for you to offer a $1 billion. So just to give a quick primer, and let's use William Nylander as an example. So he ended up going for, what, $6.9 million, I believe. Mm-hmm. So under the current collective bargaining agreement offer sheet compensation charts, anyone from $6,088,981 to $8,118,641, if you were offering in that range, which everybody was saying Nylander was looking for about eight, he settled for 6.9, like eight was his starting. Mm-hmm. That's the received fan wisdom. A team would have to come in and offer a first, second, and third round pick in addition to that money.
That's a lot of players.
It's a lot of players. It's a lot of players. So you would have to think, okay, not only do I have all that money, do I have all of those picks? And it has to be picks that you actually own. You can't trade for those picks. You need to have those picks in-house before you make an offer. So we're looking at, and I keep hearing this about Matthews and Marner, and this is going to be the ones that people are going to come out with offer sheets. And I'm thinking, all right, so you're looking at what? From Austin Matthews, over $10 million, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they're looking at Connor McDavid money, which he went for 12-something.
Yeah, 12.5, I think.
For 12.5. Mm-hmm. So anything over $10 million, $148,303, mm-hmm. you need to have four first-round picks.
First
in addition
round.
To the money. Four.
Wow.
Four first-round picks. So now you're saying to yourself, okay, this is the Jack Hughes year, right? And everybody's saying this is a generational talent mm-hmm. coming up who's going to be in the next draft. Do you want to... If you're a team that has that much cap space and thinking, you know, I can blow everything, I'm a terrible team right now, and I am going for this, you know, do you want to potentially give away four first round picks, four first round potential Austin Matthews? You don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but we have looked at past drafts, and And it's something that Pierre Maguire does frequently on the Stella Consumer Show. He'll come on and he'll redraft a year. And you're looking at players who were drafted pretty far down that have turned out to be astonishingly good players.
Yep.
So it's rough. That's really rough.
You have to really, really want a player. Now, is it also possible to sort of use this as a weapon? Like, okay, so yes, I have offered Austin Matthews $11 million or whatever, and these four first round picks that then simply puts the Maple Leafs in a position where they have to match that amount. Correct?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Because this happened, you know, going back, this is kind of interesting. This was a huge deal with Shea Weber, who back in 2012, because the Philadelphia Flyers came in and offered him $110 million in 2012.
That was not for 1 year.
For 14 years. No, 14 years. Over 14 years. Long-term contract, $110 million. Now, I believe this was before the picks were involved, because when was the CBA? When was the most recent collective bargaining agreement?
I don't know that off the top of my head, but it was not long before I moved
here. Yeah, it
was
2013. Mm-hmm. It was in 2013. So I think this is before the draft pick things were involved. And I think the Shea Weber contract, this offer may have been the impetus for that. Because the Philadelphia Flyers swooped in and said, 14 years, and they don't do 14-year contracts anymore. I mean, that they just don't, because they wipe that out with the collective bargaining agreement. You can't have a contract that long. 14 years, $110 million. He was owned by the Nashville Predators. The Nashville Predators needed to pony up that money, and they matched it. So that put the Nashville, they were forced into locking in Shea Weber for 14 years at that amount of money, where maybe they would have been coming in a little bit lower. Now, the thing is, with an offer sheet, the player has to agree to the offer sheet first. So you're thinking, here is Shea Weber turning around to Nashville and saying, I could eat it. I'm hungry, you know? And then Nashville having to say, okay, we need to rethink our entire organization, because we're dumping a butt ton of money into Shea Weber now, and he was willing to walk for cash. So how does that affect the room? Do you know what I mean? How does that affect other players? So, I'm wondering.
So yeah, from, you know, it you could say it didn't work from the Philadelphia angle, but on the other hand, maybe it did, because like Shea Weber, as we now know, Shea Weber is not actually with the Nashville Predators anymore. He got traded.
He is not. He got traded. And now Montreal has that contract.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So and one thing that I don't know a ton about offer sheets, but one thing that I know is that one of the reasons that people say that they have not happened a lot over the past several years is because it is kind of, it can be used as a weaponized sort of form of going after a player or another team. And there's sort of a gentleman's agreement between all of the different general managers, like nobody kind of wants to go there anymore, because then that sort of might put them with a target on their back for other guys to be mm-hmm. like, oh, well, he did it to these other teams, so we can do it to him.
Yeah.
So it's sort of just like mutually assured destruction. It hasn't cropped up a whole lot lately. And boy, now that I have learned this about the draft pick compensation piece of it, I feel like I would be a little bit surprised if I actually saw an offer sheet.
I would too. But then, you know, you think about a team like, I don't know, let's use the Arizona Coyotes, for example, or the Carolina Hurricanes. I mean, teams that are maybe struggling a little bit with attendance or struggling with a little bit with their market base. And if they can blow it all, they can blow the future for today to get them over the hump. Because you bring a Connor McDavid in to Arizona, and all of a sudden you have got huge marketing ticket sale potential. And when it all comes down to it, it's all about the money.
That's true. I mean, the NHL, it's a business. Each team, it's a business.
Yep.
If you don't have people filling those seats, you're not going to have a team to play on the ice for all that much longer.
Yep.
So,
exactly.
So yeah, I guess that's a possibility. Like, yeah, you may be sacrificing the next 4 years of draft picks if that's the.
I know. I do like say that, I like choke a little bit.
Yeah. So you might be sacrificing the future of your team in order to keep your team, you know, if you're in really dire straits. And I am not one of those people who is saying that Arizona is in that dire of straits, although they might be.
Right,
Like, if you really are at that point where you're on the bubble between having to move or collapsing or something like that, maybe it is worth the next 4 years of draft, first round draft picks to be able to get your, you know, Austin Matthews. Like, and I have to say, like, I would be so happy to see Austin Matthews go to Arizona. That is where he grew up. That is his hometown. Like, that's the team that he stand for as a kid. I think that would be just like a super happy ending. And then I could cheer for him because the media from Arizona does not piss me off the way the media does here.
So it's interesting. The last person who was matched with an offer was in 2013 was Ryan O'Reilly. So it hasn't happened since February 2013.
Wow.
Which is, yeah, it's been a long time. It's been a really long time. And that is probably due to the draft pick component that was added with the last collective bargaining agreement. I do find it interesting, however, because as we know, I think we talked about it here, that Brendan Shanahan made that comment regarding how perhaps players would have to make a sacrifice if they wanted to be a Leaf in order to keep that core together.
Pardon me while I vomit into the garbage can here.
Yeah, like back in the day. However, Mr. Shanahan, back in July of 1991, accepted an offer sheet from the New Jersey Devils.
Oh.
Actually, no, sorry. He played for the New Jersey Devils. He accepted an offer sheet from the St. Louis Blues. I think that's how it worked. Mm-hmm. Yes, the St. Louis Blues. Yeah, and it ended up going to arbitration, I believe. So, yeah, it was so Mr. Shanahan back in the day went for the cash.
Taking the big payout, which, you know, frankly, like I don't blame any player for doing that. Like,
no, I don't either.
Not only
but don't come back at us later and say, oh, it's not just about the money, it's about the team. Like, come on.
But yeah, while the NHL is a business, like that's the reason that I am very player first when it comes to that sort of thing. It is a business. They are going to treat you like an employee. They might call you a family member.
Absolutely.
They're not going to treat you like a family.
And that's what, you know, I was listening to who is it on Hockey Central at noon? Brian Burke was talking about the Nylander deal. And he's like, you know, take the bridge deal. You always have, you know, take the time now or take a short term deal now. And then, you know, your money will come later. I'm thinking there is no guarantee in this sport with injuries as prevalent as they are. I mean, your career could end in a heartbeat. I mean, the toll that this sport takes on players, that there is no guarantee you are going to have a 10 plus year career. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I am all for the kids like getting the money now when they're in their prime, because it is a younger, faster game, and younger, faster players they're hitting their peak earlier. And there was actually been some talk which I think is really interesting, is opening up the bargaining power for these younger players earlier rather than later, because you don't want to give a player a long-term contract when they're in their late 20s, because chances are they're not going to be at their best. Mm-hmm. Where prevailing wisdom was, and stats have showed it, that the way hockey was played 10 years ago, 15 years ago, yes, you didn't hit your peak until your late 20s. That's not the case anymore with the speed of the game. So I think that might be something that could come up for discussion as we move forward, as the game continues to evolve. Like, at what point do you let these players at least go to arbitration, or perhaps start bargaining for contracts and changing up that RFA status a little bit earlier, just so you can get the value out of them? And, you know, they can have their contracts that, so you're not at that point looking at delaying the contracts into a point where your player's not at his prime.
Yep.
So
interesting.
Yeah. Hit them with a long-term contract when they're younger, and then do the short terms when they're later. So So yeah, so that's offer sheets, which I thought was kind of interesting because I wasn't sure. I didn't realize. I knew there were draft picks were involved, but I didn't realize it was an escalating scale yeah. of draft picks. So now you know why that hasn't been a thing since 2013. Because it's going to cost you.
Yowza.
It cost you a lot. Yeah.
All right. Well, that is a great beginner's puck. What the Puck segment. I think that you should close us out with a hockey tidbit, Deb.
Oh, I have such a good hockey tidbit this time. You know, Christmas is coming. And for those who celebrate, Christmas trees are kind of a big deal. So it got me thinking about trees a little bit. And it reminded me of a story that I read earlier this year that the Montreal Canadiens have a great green initiative going on up there. But part of that is Twig for Twig program. Mm. And this just delighted me. So since the 2013-14 season, every time a hockey stick is broken by the Montreal Canadiens, they plant a tree.
I love that.
So right now, they have planted more than 600 trees. That's a lot of broken hockey sticks.
Wow.
And it's part of Tree Canada, which is a not-for-profit organization that specializes, I'm reading this mm-hmm. from their website, in putting together programs in collaboration with local companies and communities to develop and preserve the environment through forestation initiatives in both rural and urban areas.
That's awesome.
So there's delicious stats regarding the CO2 and just the effect on that and zero emission transmissions and just good stuff. But basically, I think it's a neat way to neat and fun way to kind of have this program and tie it all back into hockey with broken sticks because it happens all the time. So every time you see the Montreal Canadiens break a stick on the ice as they're playing a game, know that a tree is going to be planted.
That's cool. That is a great, great hockey tidbit to close us out.
Thought so. So,
yeah, it's been a while. We hope to be back sooner rather than later this next time, but we are happy to have you along for the ride. You have been listening to Beginner's Puck. Remember, hockey is for everyone, especially you.
Beginner's Puck is a Castria production for the Incomparable Network. Our catchy theme tune is Ephemeral by Sunspot. Have a hockey question you'd like us to discuss on an upcoming episode? Reach out to us on Twitter at Beginner's Puck or email us at beginnerspuck@gmail.com. And you can find all of our great show notes at theincomparable.com/puck.